Welcome to the JIMD podcast, a fortnightly podcast from the Journal of Inherited Metabolic Disease. In every episode, I invite one or more of our wonderful authors to discuss recent publications, allowing them to add back some of the colour that can get lost in the edit. We have an extensive catalogue of over 100 episodes, so be sure to have a flick through, but not before listening to this latest episode on pregnancy in urea cycle disorders. Hello there. Now, for those of you wondering if we'll ever talk about anything other than gene therapies, then wonder no more, as this episode has us back discussing not one but two popular topics, namely urea cycle disorders and pregnancy. My guest today brought both these subjects together in their recent paper, The Management and Clinical Outcomes of Pregnancies in Women with Urea Cycle Disorders, a review of the literature and results of an international survey, and I'm delighted to be joined by the first and last author to explain their work. Without further ado, I'd like to introduce Dr. Carolina Stepien of the Adult Inherited Metabolic Diseases Unit at the Salford Royal Hospital in the UK, and Dr. Marguerite Wagenmakers of the Centre for Lysosomal and Metabolic Disease at the Erasmus University Medical Centre Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Carolina and Marguerite, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So we've talked a lot about urea cycle disorders on the podcast, but perhaps inevitably it's often in terms of childhood and or acute presentations. As clinicians who care for adults with these conditions, how are these patients when they come under your care? I mean, what sort of challenges do our UCD adults have before we add pregnancy into the mix?
So urea cycle disorders are a heterogeneous group of inherited metabolic disorders. There's a wide phenotypic variability among patients with these conditions, in particular among female OTC deficiency carriers, ranging from asymptomatic to severely affected with serious metabolic decompensations. A proportion of patients are diagnosed after acute metabolic illness, which unmask their underlying metabolic disorder. They often require several medications to optimize their metabolic control. Some others might have been diagnosed upon a family screening and remain asymptomatic or follow a low-protein diet, which is often sufficient for them to remain clinically well.
I agree with Carolina. I think usually our adult patients are quite alike to children, actually. They still can have metabolic decompensations, and you have severely affected patients who have neurological damage because of previous hyperammonemic decompensations or because of the urea cycle disorder itself, or patients who actually do quite well and only have, sometimes they have a decompensation or not at all, and they're just asymptomatic mostly, but have to take medications and diet.
And I wonder if we could dwell on these patients just for a second longer. We're obviously keen to make sure that our colleagues outside of the IMD field are aware of these. Do these decompensations actually happen, or is this just one of those questions that turns up in exams?
No, they certainly happen a lot. We have patients who sometimes get admitted 20 times a year with decompensations, and they can be so severe that they actually end up in the ICU and need dialysis to treat them.
Yeah, I do agree. Acute decompensations do happen, and several risk factors have been identified in our patients, such as prolonged vomiting and poor calorie intake or recurrent infections and use of certain medications such as steroids or antiepileptics. In pregnant women, nutritional deficiencies prior to gestation, low BMI, comorbidities, and therapy with corticosteroids during the preterm delivery and prolonged labor may impose additional risk factors for hyperammonemia and acute illness.
So you've started to mention some of the challenges in pregnancy. You know, for your pediatric colleagues, pregnancy perhaps is something that happens to the fetus rather than the mother. But why is pregnancy so challenging for our mothers with UCDs?
Well, I think a big issue is that because patients with UCDs are becoming older and some of them are doing quite well, they become, at least the women become pregnant, which is a good thing. So it is something we are seeing more and more. But I think everybody who has been pregnant knows that nausea especially can be a big issue in the beginning. And with a decreased intake, it's something which is really a risk for possible decompensation in the beginning of pregnancy, especially if the nausea is very severe. So if there's really hyperemesis gravidarum. So that's a big issue, together with the other things Carolina also mentioned.
This work obviously encompassed a survey and a literature review. How did you pull together all of your data?
We did a thorough literature review via PubMed search, but because we thought it would be biased what was published in the literature, that's why we performed a survey with our international colleagues. And we invited both adult doctors and pediatricians, or everybody who actually had experience with treating pregnant women with UCDs, to participate in the online survey and then compare the data to see which were the similarities and which were the differences.
And how many pregnancies did you manage to capture within your data?
So from the literature review, we found pregnancies published in 52 women with UCDs, a total of 90 pregnancies in these women. But from a survey, we have data from 117 women with UCDs of a total of 147 pregnancies. So we actually collected a lot more data via the survey.
I mean, those are really impressive numbers for rare disease. And when you were talking about your outcomes, you break them down into the mothers who were symptomatic, the mothers who were asymptomatic, as Carolina mentioned, the ones who have been picked up by family screening but haven't manifested disease. And then, of course, you've got those previously unknown patients, the women whose UCD was revealed during pregnancy or in the postpartum period. What can you say about those different groups?
There is a risk to women with urea cycle disorders as well as their babies during the intra and postpartum period. And our survey has shown that the multidisciplinary management by an experienced metabolic team with a detailed prospective plan usually results in a successful pregnancy, labor, delivery, and the postpartum period. The outcomes may not be favorable if a woman is not known to have a urea cycle disorder prior to her pregnancy, and then the gestation unmasks it during or shortly after the baby has been born. If recognized and treated rapidly, the outcomes and survival is positive in both the mother and her baby.
Well, I think an important difference is if a woman is known with a UCD, she is usually treated by a metabolic physician with experience with UCDs and will ask about becoming pregnant beforehand and be counseled about pregnancy and the risks. So they are already managed and the risks are known. So that's a very big difference about the women who think they are healthy but actually get the first severe hyperammonemic decompensation during pregnancy. They usually go to an ER or get seen by a neurologist or another general practitioner for their symptoms, and they may not be recognized until a very late state or not at all until the patient dies. And if it gets recognized and if ammonia levels get measured when they are drowsy or not feeling well or in coma, then a lot of the times general physicians don't know how to treat the hyperammonemia in these patients. And if they don't consult a metabolic physician in time, this can be very life-threatening. So that's a big explanation for the large difference in pregnancy outcomes we saw between the patients who were already known with a UCD before pregnancy and the patients who became symptomatic for the first time during pregnancy.
And just quickly, I suppose I'm always trying to raise awareness of metabolic disorders outside of those immediately working in the field. You mentioned hyperemesis and nausea, obviously really common features within pregnancy. How are we going to think about these as possible UCDs earlier? Is it just at the point when the patient becomes acutely confused, or are there going to be any other little red flags that might help the earlier recognition of a metabolic decompensation in a previously well mother?
I think that's actually quite difficult, don't you think, Carolina? Because vomiting can certainly be the first symptom of a metabolic decompensation, but will probably not be recognized in pregnancies because they think it's just vomiting due to pregnancy. But yeah, the little red flags can be that women already have an aversion for meals rich in protein. So what you often see if somebody gets diagnosed with a UCD later in life, that they avoid barbecues and large, big steaks, or a family history with, you know, unexplained death at young age maybe also be a red flag. But then you need to have knowledge about UCDs to recognize these symptoms.
Yeah, I fully agree with Margaret. Fluctuating consciousness or acute psychosis after having a large meal full of protein, or during acute illness, there may be red flags. During pregnancy, a sudden onset psychosis or sudden onset acute liver disease as well. It's more challenging to diagnose an urea cycle disorder after the pregnancy because it can be masked by postpartum depression very often.
Okay, so lots of difficult diagnostic conundrums there. The third group in the middle is these mothers who are found probably by family screening. They've been told their whole lives they might be obligate OTC carriers. What advice do you give them in pregnancy?
That's quite difficult, actually, because it's difficult to predict if they are really asymptomatic and just a carrier, or maybe just mildly symptomatic and never noticed. If OTC patients come to your outpatient clinic and you measure ammonia values, it can be totally normal. But what we're actually doing in our center, and some other centers are also doing, is doing a protein loading test before pregnancy to see if they can get symptomatic or not. Because if nothing happens at all after a protein loading test, then you can be a little bit milder in your counseling. Otherwise, you actually need to have a much more thorough protocol, especially postpartum, because postpartum is a real risk for decompensation, because the uterus is very large after pregnancy. So it's nearly a kilo, and it shrinks very rapidly to only about 100 grams or something after a week or so. So it's like eating a lot of steaks in a short time.
We also encourage all women to plan their pregnancy so that they have the metabolic investigations and the dietetic review before the conception. And then we review them once per trimester at least. If there's any need for any more frequent review and frequent blood tests, we invite them to our clinics. Or if they live far from our center, we can arrange it via the Obstetrics-Gynecology team locally. We also refer these patients to high-risk pregnancy clinic, and we review them jointly. We have a peri-delivery plan developed between the metabolic team, metabolic dietitians, as well as the midwives in high-risk pregnancy clinic. This may also require anesthetist assessment and obviously plan regarding the intravenous dextrose infusion throughout the labor and delivery.
So it's just all about being prepared, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Your survey brings a wealth of new data to the topic. What does it add to our knowledge base?
Our survey showed that up to 12% of pregnant women may present with symptomatic decompensation, which was much less as compared to the 67% shown in the literature.
Yes, I think that the big conclusion is that the data from real life are really better than has been previously reported. So there must be a bias in that, especially the cases which aren't going very well are being reported. So that's very encouraging. But still, there is a real risk, especially for the women who haven't been diagnosed with UCD before pregnancy, for a not so good outcome for themselves. And what was seen in the survey, that all physicians who participated, everybody has a multidisciplinary team for high-risk pregnancies. And all physicians admit the patients after delivery for at least some days and continue to check ammonia values. So although there were differences between what physicians were doing, we were all also doing things the same as well. So that's, I think, a good thing. But it would be good to formalize that maybe with guidelines in the future.
Yeah, I agree. This survey emphasized certain differences in the clinical practice between the clinical teams in different countries. And we know that the ideal model would be where there's an Obstetrics-Gynecology team, anesthetists, metabolic physicians, metabolic dietitians in the same hospital, but it's not always the case. So knowing that there's a metabolic team elsewhere and they are contactable 24/7 is really important in case there's a patient presenting to A&E with hyperammonemia, or a patient who is pregnant and presents with this sudden onset confusion during or after the delivery.
Marguerite, you've started to mention the word guidelines. I mean, does this move us towards a management guideline for pregnancy and UCDs, or is the answer always going to be it needs to be a multidisciplinary-led personalized care plan?
I think even the guidelines will be individualized per case, but I think it would be good to have guidelines, because you see that even in the larger center, the number of pregnancies that have been managed are still quite limited. And there are centers who have only managed one pregnancy of a woman with UCD. So it really helps to have kind of guidelines. The issue will be that it will be guidelines based on expert opinion, because there is no evidence in literature except for all the cases that have been published. So that's different from some other guidelines that have been written up till now. What is really reassuring, I think, also is that there has been quite some experience, both in literature and also in the centers who participated in the survey, with medication, the nitrogen scavengers, which UCD patients take in pregnancy. I think a lot of gynecologists, pediatricians, and also adult doctors are still a little bit scared of giving this in pregnancy because of maybe teratogenic effects for the unborn child. But luckily, at least in the data we have now, there does not seem to be a real adverse effect on the children with more birth defects afterwards. The only group who isn't doing very well are the children born with OTC themselves, which can be expected.
Just to add that the guidelines would be universal for the management of pregnancies in all urea cycle disorders. Our study has shown that there are some differences in terms of the different urea cycle disorders. We know that OTC deficiency is most commonly documented, but there are also pregnancies in citrullinemia and other urea cycle disorders, which are rarer, and the clinicians need to know how to manage these conditions as well.
Even in NOX deficiency and arginase 1 deficiency, no pregnancies have been reported up till now, not in literature and also not in the survey. So we don't have any data on that.
Well, I hope that as care improves for our pediatric patients, we'll be able to hear about successful outcomes in those pregnancies sometime in the future. And certainly you conclude the paper saying that more work is needed, but that obviously takes time. And for our patients who are ready to plan their families now, they don't have that time. So I'm really grateful that you've put this all together. It's an invaluable resource. And I guess I call for clinicians and families to keep sharing details about what works, and a reminder perhaps to obstetric and midwifery colleagues that these patients may present in pregnancy and those presentations are linked with worse outcomes.
I think the most important thing is that the outcome in both women with the UCDs and the children who are born of these mothers are reassuring, at least in real world.
Yeah, and that is always nice to hear. Well, if you're keen to know more and want to read the paper, please click the link in the podcast description or go to the journal webpage and search for urea cycle disorders and pregnancy. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please have a look at the JMD podcast page in your podcast app to find over 100 episodes of audio edutainment. Carolina and Marguerite, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening. Until next time, goodbye.